Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney is not only the congresswoman from Atlanta, Georgia, but the congresswoman for everybody, like myself, who's fed up with U.S. government and its war on the Iraqi people abroad and the war on the people at home. I can't think of anyone whose views are more important as we near Dr. King's birthday to speak to on the telephone. So welcome, Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney, to KPOO.
Thank you very much, and I'm very pleased to be with you today.
Well, you are an honorary congresswoman. I'll tell you, in this studio and in San Francisco, where people really support you, and actually we're looking forward to having you out here, at least having this new film that's been made about you and the deprivation of the black vote during the last election called American Blackout, a new film that's coming out.
Yes, I'm extremely excited about the prospects for us traveling all over the country to do screenings of this film. It's just been accepted into the Sundance Film Festival, and we're making arrangements now to go there, but the timing couldn't be better because literally as this film is being released and screened at Sundance, the Georgia legislature will once again be revisiting its most repressive, regressive voter ID bill. I cannot believe that they are going back to the well a second time after the embarrassment of the front page of the Washington Post, where the career attorneys at the Department of Justice said that this amounts to a poll tax, and yet the careerists were overruled by the political appointees from the Bush administration. And then we had our own judge here in North Georgia to say on the record in a decision that this bill represented, this legislation, because it's the law in Georgia, or at least was the law, that it amounted to the reimposition of a poll tax.
We seem to be going back in a lot of areas, and the current nominee for the Supreme Court, who seems like he's going to get through without a filibuster, is very, very depressing.
Absolutely right, because interestingly, I was filling out a form, and the form asked for my citizenship. And so I said, you know, I was born in the United States. I'm a citizen of the United States. But there's something very interesting about that notion now, because when I was born, the United States was a vastly different country than it is today and than what it is becoming. And it's almost as if my citizenship is meaning less and less to the people who run this place because certain aspects of that citizenship, like voting rights, like civil liberties, like privacy rights, like one person, one vote, one of the, you know, bedrock ideals that are enshrined in our constitutional and in our political order are just being ripped asunder today.
Well, at the same time, we always have corruption, of course, on a grand scale, but now we see it on a grander scale, and yet the polls have shown that the people are really not outraged. It's like they're either numb, watching too much TV or too much sports, but in any other country, there would be calls for mass resignations. There would be calls for impeachment, and yet, if you raise that issue, people yawn.
Well, I look at the experience of the Italians who routinely can put hundreds of thousands of people in the streets and do it on a regular basis, where all of the opposition to Berlusconi have united, and it took that kind of political pressure to overcome the unity so that Berlusconi could change the law, so he would not face a loss at the polls. They have diminished their electoral rules now, so that to try and enshrine this Berlusconi majority, when in fact he enjoys a minority of support in the country, and at least the people are fighting. But here in this country, I think we had a tremendous mobilization against the war. And the powers that be showed the people who took to the streets that they could move in utter disdain of their massive numbers. And so they have done that. What then we have to do is not give up. We have to continue to struggle and fight for the America, the United States, that we know and that we want and that we were born into, which is not this America today.
Of course, one of the things that they have in Italy, also in France, when they have mobilizations, is you have a muscular labor movement that's willing to challenge a government. And even though we have a Republican administration, it doesn't seem like the AFL-CIO will mobilize, or their new breakoff, I forget what they call it, even when the Democrats are out of power, because the Democrats themselves, other than you and maybe one or two others, are also immobile in this situation. And it's extraordinary, given the litany of crimes and corruption, and you've talked about them. I was reading a speech you gave to the Black Chamber of Commerce in Georgia. It certainly would have been to the White Chamber of Commerce. They wouldn't have let you in, probably. But you were talking about the profits of the Halliburton Foundation, which people know about, but nobody seems to care. And also the scam about the bird flu and Donald Rumsfeld owning shares in the company. And what happens if people get, you said, get inoculated, or don't get inoculated. We have all these vials of bird flu, and we have another kind of flu. These are issues nobody's talking about.
Well, you're absolutely right. And, you know, they could prepare vaccine for one particular variant of the so-called bird flu, and the pandemic, if it were to happen, could actually be another one. But it doesn't matter, you see, because this is the way things are just happening now, that, okay, well, we've only invested $4 billion. You know, we'll invest another $4 billion and make you take that one, too. There's this incredible, this DARPA, which is Defense Administration Information Processing Agency out of the Pentagon, and now they're trying to establish, there's a bill in Congress to establish a BARDA, which is a bio, the same kind of equivalent with a bio, and insulating the pharmaceuticals who actually produce these vaccines from litigation. And, I mean, I can't even imagine the kind of legislation that not only is being introduced, but that is sure to pass. And I don't, you know, I really don't, I do understand that people are busy just trying to survive. I do understand that. And I also believe that the American people are a lot smarter than the powers that be give them credit for. If you go into any barbershop, it's very clear that folks understand, the men who are sitting there talking, understand the hypocrisy of what's happening. But there's also this feeling of futility of effort, just because the technology and the overwhelming powerful resources that the establishment, the powers that be, have to suppress any kind of dissent or counteraction. If you just look at the, quote, revelation about the NSA wiretapping, we have to commend the legion of whistleblowers from the security apparatus of this country who are coming forward on every issue, from fake intelligence that got us involved in a war to the outing of a CIA agent, which could have far wider ramifications than just the outing of Valerie Plame's name and function as a CIA operative. If we have to just look at all of these things that are happening and just understand that there's an overwhelming weight of those in authority. But that weight, I believe, relatively speaking, is no greater than was the weight of the powers that be, the establishment, when Rosa Parks decided that she was going to sit down on a bus and spark a movement. And the relative weight of the powers that be with the civil rights movement could say that the people, the masses of the people, formed a countervailing weight to that of the powers that be and forced change, forced at least the semblance of change. And what we have not done is to adjust to and adapt to the new challenges, the 21st century challenges, the 20th century ones, because we lost a lot of ground and we haven't regained it. So we've got to rehone our tools. So now is the time for all of our science-oriented, technology-oriented, the ones that we call the geeks and people who really can grasp what technology can do for a revolutionary movement or to it, those people need to come together and form the kind of leadership for the solutions to the 21st century challenges that we face now.
Well, certainly the technology, when I was thinking about you talking about the civil rights movement, we didn't have the internet, didn't have the cell phones. People had to communicate by telephone, word of mouth, and yet we had a movement. And now the man, so to speak, has invented what some people call tricknology. It's got people so wrapped up in new techno toys that while we're able to communicate with thousands of people with a push of a button on the internet, we are less mobile and less active and less organized than ever before. I mean,
look at, you know, you could just look at television. And I must have 100 channels on my television now, but I have less information, less news, less entertainment. So there's been a proliferation that provides more, but in essence, it's quite frankly less.
It is less because what is the wheat is hidden in the chaff, and there is so much garbage. And even on the internet, people are sending out so much information, but information is not a substitute for knowledge and how to use it. And people are getting inundated with the amount of information that they get on the internet that they can't deal with. And so many people think being on the internet is a substitute for political activity. It ain't.
Yes. Well, yes. And in fact, you remind me of a comment that actually one of our interns in the congressional office made about people thinking that the revolution will come just because they click the mouse. Click on the send button. You know, it doesn't exactly happen that way.
It doesn't happen that way. Listen, about yourself, you came back into Congress and you tried to get your seniority back. What happened with that?
Well, I actually was not successful in convincing Nancy Pelosi that my seniority was worth restoring. And I was not involved alone in that effort. I am quite confident that there were hundreds, maybe thousands of emails sent from literally every point across this country, from the large urban areas of New York City and Chicago and San Francisco to the still urban but less populated areas like down here in Georgia and throughout the South. I know that there were people all over this country who were interested and who supported the reinstatement of my seniority. After all, it is exactly what happened with the returning Republican members who came back in the class of 1995 with me, who was sworn in 1995 with me. There was one Lundgren, who Californians are probably quite familiar with, had been out
for
15 years or so. And he returned to Congress as if he had not missed one day. That's because the Republican leadership saw fit to restore his seniority because they valued his experience and the knowledge that he had gained not only while he was in Congress, but while he was out of Congress. We also had Bob Inglis from South Carolina, Republican, who returned after one term out of Congress, just like me. And he also was restored his seniority by the Republican leadership. That was not accorded to me and the legions of people who supported that call for the reinstatement of my seniority by Nancy Pelosi.
Now, it's interesting. This Saturday, Nancy Pelosi, who's a congresswoman from this city, unfortunately, she is having a town hall meeting, which was originally called to talk about Iraq, but now she's changed the title. And perhaps someone will ask the question of her, why did you not, she not support your reinstatement of your seniority? Now I understand someone named Nate Johnson, who's concerned with fixing potholes, is going to be running against you in the Democratic primary. And that reminds me of Mark Twain once said, people will claim about little lies, but they will let big lies go by. And I would think that there's a problem with fixing potholes if money is going out of the country to make a war.
Well, you know, we've got so many issues that confront us and an obscenely sinful set of priorities established for this country through the budget. I'm not saying that there's prioritizing of issues that needs to be done or addressed by those who would question the priorities that I have set forward. However, what I would say is that you're absolutely right. Young men and women are dying in a war that was based on a lie. And we have got to do something to address that issue, or else we will lose America's moral soul if we have not already lost it.
I was going to say, I think we already lost it.
Secondly, we've got budgetary issues, cuts to the social fabric of this country at a time when outsourcing and layoffs and firings are the order of the day. Bankruptcy, corporate bankruptcies are the order of the day. And we have got to deal with these issues, especially when juxtaposed to billions and billions and billions of dollars that are being given back to America's wealthiest population. It's just absolutely incredible. On top of that, then, of course, we have the issue of how we are going to treat each other, not only the people who live in this country and arrived in this country by legal means, but also those who arrived in this country and who provide the work in this country, but they came here through illegal means. We have got a lot of issues that we need to deal with. Our place in the world, our place at home, our values at home. And so I invite in the Democratic primary that we will have in Georgia a discussion of all of these issues, because quite frankly, the last thing I think we need coming from the state of Georgia or in the Democratic caucus of the House of Representatives is not another go-along-to-get-along kind of representative. We need someone who will stand up, speak up, be counted, speak truth to power, or at a minimum, sit down when the time calls for us to all sit down together and be counted. How many of those people who pontificated at Rosa Parks' funeral today would stand against the war, stand against the policies and priorities of this administration, stand against the perversion that is becoming American values, American society, that is being perpetrated upon the American people. Now is the time for us to have people who will stand up.
One of the things I remember, there was a time when the Black Caucus as a caucus was really a fighting caucus, and one after another, including yourself, but you've managed to come back, people either were forced to retire or defeated, and now you hardly hear from the caucus speaking as a caucus. There used to be an alternative budget that was proposed, even though it wasn't going anywhere, at least it was on the table. Don't hear about that anymore.
There's a website that has decided to report on the Congressional Black Caucus. I remember when I first entered Congress in 1993, I had the most profound experience watching Ron Dellum usher a piece of legislation through the House Armed Services Committee and onto the floor of the House of Representatives. And despite the fact that he was managing the legislation, he still sought to perfect that legislation by offering amendments on the floor. And that was the kind of leadership that I marveled at, because it was completely alien to the to the way of thinking of the most senior members that I had worked with in the Georgia legislature, who basically kind of told the new people or the young people that if you sit on a committee, then it's your responsibility to support even flawed legislation when it comes to the floor. And Ron Dellum showed me that that was the utter foolishness of that kind of notion. And so now we have gone from the kind of principled leadership and outspoken, eloquent leadership of Ron Dellum to the kind of columns that blackcommentator.com is forced to write. So for those who are observers of the Congressional Black Caucus and who feel that the Congressional Black Caucus stands as the vanguard for progressive politics in the Democratic Caucus as well as in the House of Representatives, I would commend to their attention www.blackcommentator.com to show how even those forces of oppression can pervade even the staunchest of organizations like the Congressional Black Caucus and help to neutralize our effectiveness.
And well, how can we help you from San Francisco in this primary? I should say, the last time I saw you was the night of the primary party of your victory in 2004 in July. I think the only time in my history, where I actually was present at a measurable victory, not just a feel good event, but actually, I couldn't believe everyone else was saying. Well, I was kind of worried when the returns were coming in and you were losing. People said, don't worry, those women aren't going to get any votes. And I'm over there worried. And then when the vote turned and people were jumping up and down, it was a moment worth the whole trip. And I remember you had the support of the mother of the first boy from Georgia to die in Iraq, and the Atlanta Journal-Constitution would not run a story about that, and how the TV had to show him that night with his son with his mother on the television, Atlanta television, because they couldn't avoid it. But you are up against it in Atlanta in terms of the media.
Absolutely, absolutely. And in fact, the craziest thing happened at the 4th of July parade, where the theme of our leading 4th of July parade here in the Atlanta area was to mark the tremendous sacrifices of those who were fighting on the front lines in Iraq. And for to be the grand marshals of the parade, they surprised four families and brought the soldiers home to serve as the grand marshals of the parade. Well, I wanted to show the other side, so I invited the mother, that same mother, Patricia Roberts, again, along with her grandson, to come and sit with me in my car. And do you know that the local TV station that sponsored that parade did not show my image because they would have had to show hers as well?
It does.
It's ridiculous. It is absolutely ridiculous. The, you know, this is a one newspaper town. It's, you know, it's a one ownership town, really, because the radio and the TV ownership are the same, the Cox information empire. But we just have to be able to get our message out, and the way that people can help me is to help me get my message out. First of all, pay attention to the things that we say when we're on the House floor. I have done special orders each month, and we've been particularly active with the Katrina panel. I think people had the opportunity to see a really riveting and moving hearing that was conducted with the actual people who were experienced the storm. And C-SPAN has been very gracious in playing it. They played it from the day we had the hearing. They played it through the New Year's holiday, in fact. So just pay attention to those things that we're doing, and then amplify that in the community. And when the time comes, come on down to Georgia, because we have a whole lot of Southern hospitality, and we know how to put you to work.
Well, I felt it. I want to also, I'm going to let you go now. I also want you to give my greetings to your wonderful father and mother, who I had a delight in meeting, and all the folks down there who showed me hospitality when I was down there in 2004. And I'm looking forward to another celebration. And maybe it can't come down this summer, but I'm looking forward to another victory and keeping you in the house and seeing you out here.
Okay, I look forward to coming back to the Bay Area.